Do we still know how to do this? Is anybody still out there?
Did we ever know how to do this?
That's a great point, Jake. We're off one for one. Jake Hutchinson to start the show. Welcome to Niners Game.
We just turn this into a shitty around the horn, except it's just downvotes on each other. It's who's got the worst opinions by the end of this.
Is LeBron being pushed too hard? we would need better Chiron for that. Okay, so this is something that has been weeks in the making. Luckily, we've had plenty of time to study. Life happens. We move forward. The draft is on Thursday. Holy shit. And we want to go through a very specific rubric here. We're calling it the mini big board.
The mini big board.
The best players at top 50. Top 150 up to 51, and then the day three guys. And this would be the best player for the 49ers scheme, the guy that we like the best, mix it all together. This is the mini big board. This is not every player. We've tried to watch every player. We've tried to view them in the lens of how they would fit in the 49ers schemes with every player. But these are the three guys per position, because we do think having a full balanced diet of positions is important. That the 49ers could, should, perhaps will go with. But before that, Jake, we got to get to the news, because John Lynch spoke today and we learned
nothing. Pretty much nothing. The only point of note I thought was interesting was him. I don't know if he was sort of ripping NIL so much as coming to grips with the fact that he's like, we actually liked a bunch of guys that we thought were going to come out and they're getting too much NIL money and they're staying in.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, shouldn't that be canceled out by the fact that there's more 23 and 24-year-olds in this draft than ever before?
I don't know.
This is like a post-World War II draft going on
here. But it's interesting, because it's like, I was talking to our buddy Nick Wagoner today, and he made a good point that, like, by next year, like, all of the COVID extension kids are done.
Yes.
So there's going to be, like, next year is apparently, there's going to be a monsoon of mids and players that probably should have come out earlier. That's the thing. It's like when people didn't come out in that COVID year, it's like you could have been terrible and gotten drafted that year. So
that's right.
Why didn't people declare?
It is interesting. Next year, I have heard from some folks that next year is a terrible draft. I didn't put that in my column today because you just never know. You just never know.
Right.
And also, like, what a bullshit excuse. Like, there's I don't know if there's 257 draftable players every year, but you should be able to find seven or eight of them.
No matter where you pick. 50% of the league is undrafted guys. So what does that even mean?
Yeah. People here are implying that there's some sort of science or logic to some of this. This is just throwing darts on the board.
It's all a shit show, as we exemplify.
No question. That's why we're the number one draft show on the internet, at least in the Philippines. And
it should be stated, we both love food. Dieter hasn't seen this take, but there was a take out there that food is the most eating is the most overrated thing in the world. And I have to come out firmly. Ben Solak of The Ringer. Listen, Ben's a beautiful football mind.
Is he?
I'll
throw some shade.
That's the craziest take I've ever heard in my life.
Eating is the most overrated thing in the world. I mean, I'd hate to hear his opinion about sex, you know? Like, oh, yeah, for procreation only. You just got to get this done.
I'm just saying, anti-eating is a whole, I don't even know how to wrap my head around that.
You know, joy, kind of overrated. This is the problem with the analytics community.
It actually scared me. It actually was like a harrowing.
Eating is overrated. Listen, I will always, as someone who's lost a tremendous amount of weight and put it on at a tremendous level multiple times in my life, we're talking two bills, both directions, too many times to count. I will go back to the Kate Moss. Nothing tastes as good as being skinny feels. Like that, there's some logic I've experienced, but then you're like, but really?
I like we're quoting Kate Moss 5 minutes into this.
Ben Solak, Kate Moss. I mean, just ridiculous people.
Do we want to start with this thing?
No, I mean, I want to talk about Lynch for a second here, because I do think that there is... You have your finger on the pulse here. You know this stuff better than I do. I'm in the belly of the beast with the toddler. Like, are people discussing... the way that they're discussing, at least in my text message chains, are they discussing how important this draft is for Lynch and that they're like, there's a baseline skepticism over if he can do this without not just Adam Peters, but Rand Carthen and so many Martin Mayhew before that.
Yeah.
They have lost a lot of dudes, a lot of guys that like, I can't even put in the paper because no one knew about them beforehand, but
right.
Just a lot of people. I mean, as much as the 49ers have been poached with coaching,
I wish
front office.
That's one thing I wish I'd asked Lynch, and he wouldn't have, you know.
It was very clear from the onset he wasn't actually answering questions.
Right.
He was up there for 30 minutes, but he wasn't.
And I knew what the answer was going to be. He was just going to point to Tariq Ahmad and RJ Gillen, guys who were been promoted and
they've been
have
promoted.
Done great work in the past. And at least it's one of those things where we're not behind closed doors. You can talk guys up all you want, but right. Adam Peters was Lynch's right hand
and outside folks, and maybe this is Peters doing some good PR work, but outside folks right. spoke very highly of Peters. And when you talked about the 49ers in later rounds and identifying talents, a lot of credit went toward Peters. Lynch right. is all about the collective. We all came to this decision. That's all well and good. I don't disagree that it does take a village to put together a draft. But by the way, like Adam Peters was also there for Trey Lance. He was also there for, you know, Danny Gray. He's there for all the failures too. And right. those have to be pinned on him just as much as anybody else. But Tariq, who is now in charge, he was Peters' right-hand man. Peters was Lynch's right-hand man. Tariq Ahmad, he was also there for all of that. And so the question is, why hadn't I heard about him in any positive? Why weren't people talking him up in any positive capacity right. before he was the guy left? I'd have a better question than that. Why didn't Adam Peters take him? These are just the questions that I ask. And I'm very interested.
And questions I don't know the answer to. And it's something where maybe it's just cyclical, you know, it's like, it's this guy's turn and he's next up.
He was about to get a better gig with the Niners. So you don't want to deprive him
right.
of that. I mean, that's cool of him. Like, listen, I'm not in any way insinuating that anybody here is incompetent. I'm just saying we don't know these guys, and both sides of the coin have to be explored. And this is the most important draft the 49ers have had since 2019. I don't think that's up for debate because of the imminent need to improve with depth.
It would have been the Trey Lance draft if they didn't luck into Brock Purdy.
Brock.
You know,
right.
like it that would
well,
have
John Lynch
been,
wouldn't have a job if they didn't luck into Brock.
As Purdy. Was stated to him.
It made for a very good lead.
Right.
that he should be out of a job.
I'm with you to answer your previous question.
Yeah.
I don't think that perception is as widespread as it maybe should be, that this draft is monumentally important, because people have these perceptions and just reading, you know, mock drafts of other, you know, experts. And so just to get a feel of how people perceive the 49ers on the outside,
everyone thinks it's hunky dory,
right? There's a sense of like, we just need to, you know, it's, you get guys for a few years down the line. It's like, you might need a tackle. Like Trent Williams gets hurt. You don't have a backup tackle.
You don't have a backup left tackle. It's
just okay.
You're really pushing
Moore,
it at guard.
Unless you're Jalen Moore fetishist, which you should be institutionalized.
No, they might be, though. They love Jalen Moore.
I know. I'm just saying, if that's what gets you going and you're like, we'll be fine, we got Jalen Moore, like, you might need to see somebody. But there are things the 49ers, they have missed in key positions, and you can do, and usually they luck out and they get somebody who plays
when
above
they hit,
their grade.
They hit exceptionally well. The problem is that they just don't have any. They have very few middle class guys, and a lot of those middle class guys are playing full time roles at a less than average level, I think is the nice way to put it. But
right,
if we're talking about needs, I don't think the 49ers have a pressing need. Like, they can figure it out. If they didn't make a pick in this draft, they could figure it out.
Agreed.
That is good. That is good.
And
is it
and
a better team than last year? No.
Yeah. I think they did a lot of work to make sure that they didn't go into this draft. I will credit them with that. They looked at this defensive end class, which I think is pretty bad.
We hate it.
It actually could turn out to be great.
No one knows.
It's a bunch of guys that are super like athletic, but have like they're weirdly skinny, or they have no.
You're gonna find out sometime in mid-August if this guy can play in the NFL or not. Like, feel free to roll the dice on a first round pick like that. Maybe not a first.
You like,
there's first round options, and then there's six rounds of crapshoots.
Right.
And it's just a question. But like wide receiver, there's four rounds of great players. Running backs, there's seven rounds of really good running backs. Quarterbacks, there should legitimately be three or four rounds of really good quarterbacks. Right. Offensive tackle, you have top 50 or so picks, really, really good. And then there's actually some interesting players at the very bottom of the barrel that like are worth a shot. Defensive end is you could take a guy in the seventh round or the second round, and honestly, you could just flip-flop them. It just doesn't matter.
It's a mess. It's a mess.
Good defensive tackle class, though.
But yeah, I think they do have a need to get younger. They got a lot of guys who are aging.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be a thing. If they want this to be like, let's usher in like the Brock Purdy era when they get – there's going to be guys getting older, aging out of their contracts, and you're either going to have to extend them or – need to develop depth.
Strictly speaking, fiscally, when Brock Purdy gets paid, that means Debo Samuel is gone. That means what's going on with this bubble? That means Debo like Samuel.
StreamYard's
like. sorry to our audio listeners, of which there's six left.
Right.
You know, Debo's gone. You're gonna have to get rid of Charvarius Ward, probably. I mean, there's going to be some. I wouldn't call it austerity, but there's going to be some culling that has to happen. And the only way to replace those guys, you can't just go out and get another free agent. You need to replace them from within. And as of right now, there's no obvious incumbent or there's no obvious follow-up. There's no obvious understudy that can come in and do it.
Like George Kittle, like what do you – you got nothing.
They don't have any other tight ends. They don't even have NFL tight ends. Like they're just rolling the dice. And this is what happens when you fail a couple of times, you know, Latu, all that. You fail there and you just keep sticking with Ross Dwelly and Charlie Warner. Charlie Warner doesn't turn into the next, you know, George Kittle like they thought he would. Worth a shot. Nothing wrong with that. He was an NFL caliber player. I don't, you know, good special teamer, you know, but he was never going to be George Kittle. But again, sixth round pick, worth the shot. But you think about offensive line is a great place to start. Running back, you need a running back. You think about fullback, you need your next fullback. I don't know if that's somebody you take in the draft or it's not. Tight end, you need guys there. Wide receiver, you need guys there. I mean, there's not a position where you go, they're good. Like they can go without. Every single position, they can draft somebody. And they could draft someone fairly early.
Right. They're a year away from being on this knife's edge of, okay, we're good. And oh no, these guys are all old and washed. And what do we do? And maybe it lasts longer than that.
Having to do the Rams thing where they just have to eat a year. Draft a bunch of guys and play them immediately.
Right. So I think where we should start is just brief round one scenario. What we actually think they do, and then get into our mini big board.
I think they actually go at 31. And the 49ers have been the most disparate team from sort of consensus big boards over the last 7 years. Like they just don't let outside noise get in. They don't leak and they don't let outside noise get in. They go through their process and they are hardcore. They do not worry about the outside perception. The one time that they failed to do that, I think, was with Lance, and they will never make that mistake again. They allowed the outside perception to get in. There's a big infighting. It's not to say that, you know, Trey Lance was forced upon them by the people.
And let's be honest, those guys all suck. So
they all sucked. They all sucked. But they went, you know, I think that they were ready to go at three with Mac. And they had to talk themselves out of it because it was going to be such a negative thing.
The real mistake was just trading up just so they could scout guys. Just
scout them. No one's stopping you. You can still show up. It's not an invite. I mean, it's an invite only. You're one of 32 NFL teams. You can go.
Right. Like the Vikings are at, 11? They're not hiding that they're scouting quarterbacks. Like,
otherwise, they start Sam Darnold. But, like, they haven't made that move yet. But I think they stay at 31. There's only two positions they're going to take. It's a defensive tackle or an offensive tackle. Maybe an end. Outside shot, if Chop Robinson is there, they'll take an end. But it's a defensive tackle. Or an offensive tackle.
I was going to say corner, but I don't believe that. They haven't drafted a corner in the first round in like 20 years.
And this is not, unless Cooper DeJean is there, which he won't be, they can't do it. They just can't do it because that's just, it's not a good spot. I think they stay at 31, and I think that an offensive lineman falls to them. I really do. I think that it might be Mims. There has been a little, you know, the winds are not blowing his direction right now. Some health stuff, certainly the fact that you can't really play him in the NFL to start off. But when you talk about a prospect, because they're all prospects.
Yep.
High ceiling and low floors, right? Those are the you know, where we got to figure it out. Very low floor, highest ceiling of anybody in this draft, without a question in my mind. We all love, you know, we love a lot of offensive linemen. We love a lot of tackles in this draft. I don't think that they're, if it all works out perfectly for all of them, Mims will be the best because he is so physically imposing and because he moves so much. And if it just clicks, it is stupendous. And if he's sitting there at 31, they can't say no. And I'm starting to think that he's going to be there at 31. I really am. So that's where I think he goes.
It's funny. He was mocked there, and then it's like he shot back up into the 20s. Yeah, that's interesting. They're definitely.
I also think Kingsley is a real option there at 31, and I know that.
Yeah, I think. Here's the thing: where I think they're going to go is, I think they're going to trade back a few picks.
Okay.
And
go with my man.
They might go with like Roger Rosengarten, like way too early.
Well, where's like, too early for Rosengarten, who we both love, second or third round grade, according to Dane Brugler, who needs to get it together.
I mean,
sorry, that's an inside joke between Jake and I.
I think Rosengarten is a guy that should be drafted in the third round and is going to go like top 50. And it's not. Here's the thing. When we discovered him, we're like, oh, this guy's projected as like a fifth round pick. There's this thing that happens where the draft cycle.
We're really good at that.
Right. We just discover a guy and then we're like, oh, this guy's going to go here. And then a week later, he's like, oh, is this guy a first round pick? I don't think Rosengarten should be a first round pick. I think he actually is a very smart tackle. I think he has. I don't know. I think he has a foundation of, I'm going to feel good about him in the run game. He's athleticism.
What do we say about him? He's an exceptionally high floor player.
And he's learned to compensate for a lack of anchor. So when he does develop an anchor, that's great.
Here's Which you might thing. Not have to.
He's got legs like me. Like, that's a problem. Like, I'm proud of my legs, but I'm not 6 foot. What is it? 6 foot five. Like, that's a problem. You know, I think he needs to be basically, 6 foot five, and he's, 300 pounds with very, very, skinny, normal person legs.
4'9", 240, though, so I don't want those legs getting too heavy.
I'm just saying he needs to be force-fed, be on leg presses, just a diet of protein shakes, build up a lower half. Because if he can anchor even mildly,
he's awesome.
It's a major upgrade over Colt McKivitz. And it's a guy that you're going to have it right. But to me,
give me the number.
I don't.
Give me the number.
A number of where he goes.
Where does he go?
36 to Washington.
36 is a number that a lot of people have discussed that the 49ers trade down to. Because Washington, there is some speculation. And
that's a spot I like.
There's some speculation. And my first rule is lock it in on April 1st. I have lied. I've lied. And I'm going to tell you right now that I sip from the well. There's some speculation that the Commanders might not, in fact, draft a quarterback at 2 and try to get back in later into the first round with the Niners to go and get a Penix or a Bo Nix, which I think would be a sick move. I think that's
I've been thinking that 36 spot in my last mock draft. That's what I did. I went Niners straight down to 36, and that's a good spot because the Commanders have 36 and 40. It feels a little weird for them to go 36, 40. Like I think they're a team, especially when you come in, you're a new regime. You want to have your imprint on a franchise. You want to get back up in the first round and take a swing. You get a little bit too antsy. You get a little bit. you feel yourself a little bit too much. You're like, I'm in charge now. Like, I get to run this show. Let's make a move here.
Well, it's interesting, too, because Martin Mayhew took over in Washington. He was one of Lynch's, he was Lynch's top lieutenant before Peters.
And was like Lynch's vet back when they played, like welcomed yes. Lynch into the league.
And Washington effectively fired him, but he still works for Washington.
It was, yeah, it was like, they're like, you're not in charge anymore, no. but you're going to stick around. And the guy who comes in is going to decide whether you stay. And Peters is like, well, I'm not going to fire my old buddy.
So. Yeah, that's right. He's, I know this guy's extremely valuable. I don't really know
and
what
I'm doing.
And they
had the same job with the 49ers. Like,
that's right. So that's something to think about there, in that you go, you want to go and you want to make a big imprint. Is the best idea to make a big imprint to just completely push your chips to the middle of the table for a quarterback? If you are like us and you don't buy the top three, I just don't buy them. I don't think it's ever worth it. I don't care if it's Peyton Manning, because for every Peyton Manning, there's a Trey Lance and a Jamarcus Russell. Like, the hit rate. Also,
Peyton threw what, like 40 interceptions his rookie year?
I mean, like, yeah, if it wasn't Peyton Manning, you know, who were the other guys that Peyton Manning was going along with? It was Tom Brady, sixth round pick. We all know that. That's the yin to the yang. But it's also Ben Roethlisberger, who was sort of middle of the first round, and he went to a good team. And I just think that there is something to be said for not tying yourself as a general manager to a quarterback if you don't firmly believe that he is going to carry us all the way home. Like, and I think that's a pretty hard argument to make if you are somebody coming in fresh. It's different for the Bears, because the Bears have 1 year to get this thing right. So they better go with just the supernova, you know, CJ Stroud, like, guy who could just come in. The talent is so much, it's undeniable, and he's just going to rip it. And if he fails, that's someone else's fucking problem, because I'm already dead. Yep. And if I'm Adam Peters and I'm coming in here, yes, you know, the new ownership is going to be like, hey, you got as much time as you need. You know, you can't fail. If you take a quarterback in the top three and you fail, you're fired. And the exclusion to that rule is John Lynch, who got his franchise quarterback with the last pick in the draft.
Right.
You want to talk about luck, absolute luck. That's the only way to stay alive if you fail with the top three
pick. I know. Lynch
I loved it. It was like, a great question from Mayoko today, saying, how do you feel about that? And Lynch is like, I should be dead.
I know. And Lynch comes in today. He's like, I love the draft, man. You know? It's a great time. Like, what does John Lynch have to worry about? Like, he's built like almost Super Bowl caliber rosters, and like has lived the dream as a football player. He's got
The worst case scenario for John Lynch? He goes and makes $20 million a year as an announcer,
right?
Because he'd immediately, with the way that, you know, the money's going around there, he'd immediately take over as a number two somewhere.
Right.
I mean, who knows if Brady's ever going to do it?
He's just like desperate. He wants to win a Super Bowl. Like,
but let's not forget what John Lynch was brought in originally to be. He was originally brought in to be the Manchurian candidate for Kyle Shanahan. He was brought in to just be the face of the operation, because with the GM, as Lynch kind of explained today in his presser, and you can watch that, it's on the 49ers YouTube, and I'm certain it was streamed by so many others, including 95.7 The Game. they got all those clips if you need them, baby.
That's right.
He was brought in because the GM's job isn't just going and grinding tape and figuring out free agents. GM's job is talking to sponsors and glad handing. It's very political these days, making sure that player, like Bob Myers, I know Bob very well from his time. Apparently he works for the Washington Commanders now. That's very weird. But
he's just floating around taking odd jobs in high places. Good for him.
Bob. It's a lot less stressful. I'll tell you that right now. But Bob's job, like, he thought that he was coming in and he was going to be, hey, we're gonna mix it up. I'm playing. It's basically fantasy basketball, right? You know, it's just like fantasy football. You're just doing what we do, where we're just shooting the shit. You know, we get to grind tape and we love it and it's fun. And it's like, hey, this is all great. No, you have to do so much other stuff that isn't anything related to football. And Bob ran into that. It's like, how I'm the team shrink. I'm being tossed out into, you know, oh, well, these guys want to buy luxury box seats. Let's talk to Bob. You know, you're the figurehead. Now, I will say, for John Lynch, credit to him, he has shown he showed Kyle originally enough that Kyle has given him more and more responsibility because Kyle has wanted to become more and more insular with play calling and the actual team. He has trusted John Lynch, who was originally just the figurehead to do the dirty work, make the phone calls, execute his game plan. It's now John's front office. John makes the calls. John has final say. That's an incredible thing, and it speaks to his competence. But again, a lot of that competence was, you have to give, you know, John's always about the collective and giving credit to everybody. And yes, it does take everybody to make these decisions when you have to put in one phone call to make a call. But man, how much was he leaning on other guys to get this done? And now how much is that football brain being put to the test? Because if he has one great skill, other than, I guess, being personable, which we know, that's a given. Right. He has one great skill. It's he put together a motherfucking staff. He put together dudes. He has four GMs. Four GMs on his original staff.
Greatest superpowers are their ability to assemble great talent around them.
That's right.
And teach it.
That's right. That's right. And I honestly would prefer that in a coach than whatever Belichick had going on. Where because other than Bill Belichick, you burn out. You would burn out.
Right. Did you hear, you know, Matt Rhule was talking about, he's like, yeah, we brought Bill in to teach and we had to stop him a few times. And he's like, are you guys getting this? And Rhule's like, well, no, we weren't, but he's a brilliant man.
And I'll say this about Matt Rhule. He is I've known Matt for a long time. He's a very sharp football guy. And Matt's big issue in Carolina was that he wanted too much control and he wanted to run it like a college program to a certain degree. It just didn't pan out. We're off the subject. The point is, this is John Lynch's draft through and through, and it's cruel fate that the draft that they need to nail more than ever, save for when they were rebuilding the son bitch, the draft they need to nail more than ever. The new foundation needs to be set right at the same time that they had a significant brain drain, and they have to rebuild the entire front office and build another personnel
department. Triggering phrase coming up. Two timelines, baby.
Oh, well, that's another reason we were gone for a couple of weeks. But luckily, there's no impediment now.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we start with...
let's just do quarterbacks.
We're going to get into this mini big board. Say, we're John Lynch. You know, we got full control here. Okay. We're giving you our mini big boards. We're going to go...
Let's start
with offensive... We'll do offensive line first. Start with offensive tackle. Then we'll move into all the rest.
Offensive tackle, the ideal top 50 pick... Within reason for the 49ers, right? So we're taking off Joe Alt and all that. The ideal top 50 pick, somewhere between 20 and 50 for the San Francisco 49ers at offensive tackle. When I say that, whose name comes to mind?
It's not Fautanu because he's not going to be there, but if
Fautanu's going to be going top 20 in your opinion.
Yeah. If Troy Fautanu gets to like 20, the Niners should swing the hell out of it and go for him. Like,
I'm with you.
Even if he falls past 15, they should be like, "Hey, what do you want for that? What can we give you?" Because
do you like Deebo Samuel?
That's my true top 50 guy.
Apologies. Continue down the line.
Mims. So offensive tackle is one position I've got a lot.
Yeah.
So
run some names by
me. There's some positions I got one. So. Top 50, I think the best true fits for the 49ers at tackle would be Fautanu or Talese Fuaga at Oregon State. Those two guys I think would be perfect. I think they're going to go too early. After that, Marius Mims and Tyler Guyton are both guys who are projects, who have some flaws with their game.
That's right.
But I think are slightly better, safer projects than maybe Kingsley Suamatia out of BYU. That said, I think the 49ers might go to him. So, you know, my 51 to 150, I had Roger Rosengarten as my 51 to 150.
I think
he's going to go earlier, but I really think that's a fair range for him.
Okay.
So he's my 51 to 150 guy.
And who's who's your waiver? Who's your last guy? Who's your 151?
I got to go with Frank Crum out of Wyoming. I know we can use the same guy. Listen, he doesn't know what he's doing out there. He's a big boy. He's got no clue. But, man, he's athletic. And if you're taking a guy in the sixth, seventh round who, he sucks. But a lot of late round tackles are just going to suck.
Yeah, like, if he didn't suck, he wouldn't be there.
Take a guy who's got crazy athletic upside and is at least he likes to get mean in the run game. Like
he's a road grader. He's 6'8", 313 pounds. Here's my favorite stat about him. He runs a 4.94 40 yard dash.
Here's my blurb.
He is literally my size right now. Literally. And he could probably run a second faster than me in the 40 yard dash.
Crazy. My thing is, I'll just describe him real quick. He doesn't really know what he's doing, but he's kind of a mean motherfucker and an athletic freak, and that's what's important.
Oh, here's something to note today. They asked John Lynch about, you know, kind of the storyline that I hate.
Frank Gore's kid is in. Christian McCaffrey's brother. It's like this and that.
I cover the Warriors, and I understand that it's not nepotism. It really isn't. It strikes me a little bit as that when we're talking about one team as it pertains. Like, yeah. I do think there's something to be said for it. And John Lynch agrees. He says, I believe in bloodlines. That makes a lot of sense. Frank Crum's dad played in the NFL. I'm willing to take the shot.
Yeah. It's a great offensive lineman last name. There's something to that. Crum.
Okay. I'm with you on Mims. I think Mims is the ideal project because halfway through a season, you put Chris Forrester on him. Halfway through a season, you can reasonably think that you can throw him in there and he will succeed more than he will fail.
He's your swing tackle and he's got size.
And
you'll find out.
At some point, he's going to have to be on the field and we're going to have to find out. Give him halfway through the season. You give him till November. And if you have to play him, you can play him. Or you feel better about playing him. Right. And you give him an off season. And by the way, the thing that they have to think about with tackle here, and this is why it's a priority position, even though they do have both of their starters locked up, is that you don't know if Trent Williams is going to be, one, the same player next year. Age comes for everybody. When it goes fast. And two, if he'll stay around if he's not the same guy. And so this is a guy who has fought off retirement rumors twice already. This is a guy who beat cancer in the middle of his career. Like, this is a guy who has made so much money. Now, I don't know what he does with all that money, but he doesn't need this. And he is
like, the 49ers are set up for another deep run. Like, that's taxing, you know?
Totally. Those are serious reps. And we saw how heavy those reps seemed to weigh on him in the Super Bowl. He kind of sucked. And so, and by the way, that's something that the Niners have noticed and are very concerned about. That, hey, that might have been the start of the decline. And now there's a book out on him.
Yeah. Also, just real quick, for anyone who thinks 49ers don't care about offensive tackle, you're wrong. They spent number 9 on Mike McGlinchey. They pay Trent Williams, you know, $30 million. Yeah. They just like think they can cobble the rest of the line together. And they've been mostly right, to be fair.
Kyle Shanahan doesn't believe that guards should be paid heavily, especially because he is so idiosyncratic with his desires for center, which is smartness and mobility. Yep. And at guard, which is just, I don't know. They don't really know. They just don't worry about it too much, because at some point you have to just say, this is not a position that we put a lot of stock into. That is something that Kyle Shanahan has done at every stop he's had beforehand. It's worked out just fine for him. So they're not going to start now. That said, would love to see an upgraded guard. Why not? Is it going to be a priority for them? No, but tackle has to be a priority. Yep. And when you talk about what they need from a tackle, what they need is somebody who could reasonably halfway through the season, if Colton McKivitz sucks a big one, they could toss him in there because they taught him a little bit and they can figure it out and they have the athletic ability, which is something McKivitz doesn't have. He's smart. He can figure stuff out. He can, you know, be in the right positions and stuff. Doesn't mean he can execute it because he doesn't have the athletic ability. You get the flip side of that. You get the athletic ability guy. You toss him in there. Hopefully he learned enough. And somebody who at some point in this draft, you need to go out and get somebody who in a year from now can start for you at left tackle. You cannot wait until next year's draft to get your starting left tackle, because in theory, you should be drafting here at 31 or somewhere like that. You should be drafting at 32 next year. You're not getting your starting left tackle as a rookie at that spot. So, and you're
that's
not
part of the argument to just maybe package picks and move up and 100%. Go get one of the guys at the top. If you can.
You need to get a right tackle for November, December, January, and you need to get a starting left tackle for next year. I think Mims, again, has the highest ceiling of all of these tackles. 6'7", 340 pounds, runs a 5.07, got 86 inch arms. If it works, it's spectacular. We're in agreement. Let me talk to you a little bit about Javon Foster out of Missouri. He's a bit doughy, but he's strong as an ox. And I think he moves pretty well. I don't think that it's an ideal movement profile, but I do think that if you are thinking more right tackle, if you're thinking, hey, this is somebody who's at least going to hold down that spot, you might not be able to run all the cool plays you want, but he will be able to stop Brock Purdy from dying wherever he plays. That's a really good option. That's important. A high floor, maybe lower ceiling play for the 49ers, and that's somewhere in 151 to 150. I feel pretty good about that, yep. Especially too, because I do think that maybe some of the rubric that we understand that the 49ers value at their position, at least on offense, is going to change as it pertains to Purdy. I mean, they're building around Purdy. Agreed. That was a factual statement that John Lynch said today. We all knew it. He said it today. They're building around Purdy. That means that you need someone who can flip an anchor, at least on the right side. And say what you will about Javon Foster, he doesn't look great. He kind of looks soft. I don't know. He does not have an elite body. He's no Mims, or he's no Kingsley. He doesn't look right, but he gets the job done every single time. He was an elite tackle at the SEC level. That matters a lot to me. I think Javon Foster, somewhere between the third and the fifth round, that you could do a whole lot worse. You could do maybe a little bit better. And then I'm with
Squatty. You just sits down and pass pro. Just
you're not
solid.
Getting past him. That man has a wall sit for days.
And I talked to, you know, when they brought in Matt Pryor, who's just massive and would look terrible in the run game.
Yeah.
And could anchor in one-on-ones early. I talked to Chris Foerster and I'm like, what's your view on that in terms of a guy who can anchor in pass pro? And he's like, listen, like, there is something to the fact that if you can just like sit down and pass protection, that's pretty good. Cause then maybe we can teach you the run game. It's a little harder the other way around.
When in doubt, just get someone who will stop the defensive end from killing your quarterback. That is ultimately the baseline of this game. Everything else is just window dressing. Do you want to talk
about interior, baby? So I think we usually just go interior offensive line rather than going center and guard.
Okay.
I will make one quick distinction. Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon, that guy can't play guard. He is a pure center.
And I'm with you.
Not necessarily biggest fan. He's a little too squatty. Like he's got very good agility. I think he could be very, very good. I'm just saying he's maybe not my type of guy.
I would say the same about Zach Frazier, the West Virginia center. I can see why people like him. I don't think that he fits the scheme as well as he fits other team schemes.
The guy in the top 50 for me, and there's only one.
Really?
It's Graham Barton out of Duke.
That's exactly who I had.
Yeah, he's sick. He's like elite athleticism, played tackle at Duke, and he's a guy where he's not a tackle. Everyone's projecting him at guard and center because that's where he should be playing.
That's right.
Played center early on in his career at Duke. He is so goddamn mean. It's a little tough when you project, but he's smart. He's really patient and he will punish you. Like he can go down a little easy on the outside, but again, he's not really supposed to be there. Initially I was like, I don't know if he's worth round one. And then you watch more and you're like, this guy's so physical. He really picks stuff up in terms of like if he's alone and, you know, he's got one guy that, you know, a tight end's taking him, he picks up other stuff. Like he's always active. He's never just standing there and he really gets after it in the run game. I just think he's going to be a stud. And I don't necessarily believe the 49ers would pick any interior offensive lineman, you know, at 31. Yeah. But if there was a guy that they were to do it, it would be Barton.
How about Cooper Beebe out of Kansas State? I think he's a top 50 player. And again, a high floor caliber player. Oh, he is a spectacular beast. He is because he moves very well. I know that some of the agility numbers and stuff don't necessarily indicate that. I love the way that he attacks. You watch his tape and you just find him floating around looking to kill. And he's built in a way that looks like he can never be knocked down. He's built like a Russian nesting doll. And I really enjoy one that can move. Have you ever seen those, like, I think they started at Dartmouth. I'm sure Stanford has them. Those like mobile tackling dummies.
Oh, yeah.
He moves like that, except there's no wobble at all. Mm. He's just, it's just there. Like, it, you're never taking him off his spot, and he's out to kill. Good farm boy out of Missouri. Like, he is.
I love that.
Actually, he's out of Kansas, but, you know, whatever.
All right.
I like Cooper Beebe as a top 50 player.
I like it.
He's my favorite guard in this draft.
That's fair. He's a large dude, just really solid. And I think there is something to finding guards who can just like anchor, like when like Spencer Burford was fighting for his life, like in pass pro.
And you think, like, oh, Spencer Burford is so sorted, strong. It doesn't matter if your feet are wrong. It doesn't matter if you can't hold the ground. It's nice that you can punch somebody out of a lane, but if they just run directly into your face, will you stop them from doing it? And BB's going to stop him from doing it. And if he gets on the move, he's going to throw you 10 yards behind where you stood when he made contact with you. I love
my other two guys, IOL, 51 to 150 range.
Yeah.
Guy I've talked about forever, Tanner Bordellini.
We love him.
Just pure athleticism, and he gets out, finds work in the run game. I think he's truly a perfect fit for the 49ers. He's projected again and again and again to be available in the fourth round, and I can't totally wrap my head around it. I just think he's a perfect selection. If they can get him there, it's going to be great. I love it. My last two guys, Trevor Keegan out of Michigan. Michigan just has a ton of guys, really like quality offensive line.
Huh. Because I'm a Ladarius Henderson head.
Oh, nice. So Keegan, he's really agile. He finds work really well. He can get a little too high, a little too vertical in his sets. Want him to sit down a little bit more.
That's right.
But when he places his hands well, he can really drive on guys. And he just kind of looks like a mean right guard. And my last guy, Dylan McMahon out of NC State.
Love him.
The exact movement skills you're looking for.
Yeah.
Can get pushed a little bit. Size-wise, but he's like the perfect outside zone developmental center that you're looking for.
I can't believe that Dylan McMahon has a sixth, seventh round grade on him. I would take him as early as the fourth round.
It's what's bizarre to me in this draft is we spend a lot of time combing through, and the Beast is great because it gives you like
a lot of names. Go to town.
Just names that you don't know where to look. There's not a lot of big boards that are as well thought out and as inclusive.
Yeah.
And when you go down and you find a guy in the seventh round and you watch it, you're like, I don't understand what I'm not seeing here because.
It's tough. I think that especially in later rounds, when there's guys that don't have a prospect pedigree hype, there becomes a little bit of a confirmation bias. And I think that we lean in a little bit too hard on their weaknesses and not so much into their pluses. Whereas I think that fundamentally, when you're coming at this thing, if you can find any pluses for a day three pick, that should be the only thing that matters.
And maybe that's why the 49ers have such trouble in round three. Because the first two rounds, it's these guys are freaks. What's wrong with them? And you go and say,
yeah, you parse down what their wrongs are.
And then in the later rounds, you go, what can we cling on to? And then in round three, you're like, I kind of like him.
Only good round three pick they ever had was an experimental pick in Fred Warner, where they just said, oh, here's a safety. We like him as a linebacker. And they just went off everybody's board. They picked him 50 picks before anyone else would have.
And they should do that again this draft.
And this is, you know, again, credit to the Niners. They stick to their board. And their board has nothing to do with the Beast or any mock draft database.
Although it has matched up reasonably well.
Well, that's because a lot of teams are on the same shit as the 49ers now. And I think a lot of people are now keen to what that means.
That's true.
Also, when you are so successful, when you're successful, teams are going to copy you. So let me tell you a little bit here about Ladarius Henderson. I mean, he messes up a good deal, but when he hits, I don't know how to put that nicely, but when it hits, it's like, oh, that's a first or second round talent. Yeah. And then he'll fail. And I think that there's something to the guy you got to think about here is 74. And what is the issue when you have 74 out there? It's I'm not seeing the flash, but I do see the downside. And if you're taking someone late, I need to see the flash because I think it's easier to coach out the downside than it is to build somebody up. So I'm a big fan of Ladarius Henderson. I'm also just a big fan of everybody on that Michigan offensive line. I think that you'd be a fool not to leave with one of those Michigan offensive linemen. Where do you want to head next?
Let's head to wide receiver.
Okay.
It's a sexy one, you know?
I'll start on this one.
Great.
When we're talking 49ers, when we're talking wide receiver, we're talking somewhere between 20 to 50. I have come around on this guy immensely. Not that I was ever out on him.
Right.
But the more it's an itch that I can't fully scratch. And it's Ricky Pearsall out of Florida.
Hell yeah.
I can't talk myself out of Ricky Pearsall not being the absolute shit. I can't talk myself out of it. I don't understand what the downside is with him. And I will say this. I think that he would be better suited for an offense that actually went 11 personnel, had three wide most of the time, because you can mix him inside and outside. I think he would kill on the Colts. In fact, I think the Colts should take him at 15.
And also, I think Miami.
Miami, he would kill. He would absolutely kill. Because not only is he going to be a really solid possession receiver, but I think he's got big game all over him. I think if the Buffalo Bills are sitting there.
My only concern with him is short arms, and I don't really care.
I don't care because his catch radius is insane. He has better body control than almost anybody in this draft. I think Ricky Pearsall is going to be an immediate hit. I think that he will be one of the top receivers in the NFL for years to come. I think if I had to put a flag down and say, this guy is going to succeed more than anybody else in this draft, it's Ricky Pearsall. And I cannot believe I'm saying that. Anybody in the top whatever, I think Ricky Pearsall is going to be... I don't think he'll be the best player in this draft, but I am certain he will succeed. I'm just so convinced of it. And again, it seems as if he should just be the best slot receiver in the NFL, that you can also push out wide and 21 personnel, things like that. Because the Niners keep short splits, I think that they could use Pearsall in really fun and interesting ways. Because again, there's no area of the field that he isn't going to be plus at. He's going to go over the middle at all three levels just beautifully.
He's got a little bit of the I don't want to say dumb wide receiver, but it is a little bit dumb.
He's out ready to die. He is ready to die for any
ball.
Pitch.
He loves ball. Like that's important. It. You know, like if you're going to go over the middle and, you know, as Bomani Jones said, we have gentrified the middle of the field.
That's right.
It's not as dire as it used to be. But it's still
you can walk through that neighborhood.
Right. But you can still get popped. Like you can still get rocked over the middle of the field. And if you're going to be a slot receiver, you can't be like, oh no, like Dante Pettis. Like you can't be
thinking, no softness. Oh, he's got the crazy, as we so often.
Yeah, you can't be thinking, I have a lovely cat at home. You know, like, you got to want to die a little bit. And I think Ricky Pearsall has that. I had two wide receivers in my top 50. For the 49ers range, it's Pearsall and Xavier Leggett. Xavier Leggett he's a little stiff. He's a little stiffer than I want, but I don't really care. He makes some insane, insane catches. So athletic. So like physical too. Like when you want a guy, if you get rid of Debo, you know, and it's nice to not have to trade Debo and you just have two South Carolina guys and you switch to one next year.
That's
but like he's going to block. And
this is the new taller Debo.
Right. You know, and you can put him in the slot if you lose Juwan Jennings or, you know, I think he's super physical, so athletic, and you can work with him on some of the polish. You know, the stiffness worries me a little bit, but I think there's ways you can use him that outweigh that.
You're still in an offense that schemes guys open. Right. And so. What the reason I love Pearsall is you don't have to skip him open. So imagine what it would look like if you did. And then also I think he'll be a really good blocker, or at least a committed blocker.
Agree.
And that's all you need to be a good blocker in the NFL, because cornerbacks ain't about that life. And I love Pearsall. I think Leggett is sexier. I think it's a funner pick. It's going to be easier.
The best voice I've ever heard.
It's going to be easy to show him on the nightly news and be like, hey, look at this highlight. Like, this is coming to the 49ers. That said, Pearsall had the best highlight of any receiver in the draft. So, also deal with that. Who do you have 51 to 150?
Javon Baker.
Same.
And Okay, so you've got Javon Baker. My other guy is Jalen McMillan out of Washington.
Okay, talk to me about Jalen McMillan, because I got another guy too.
He's got good size. He's not like 6'3". I think he might be like 6 foot, 6'1", something that. He tried to play through a knee injury way too much his senior year, and that hurt him.
Yep.
But he's
made 79 catches for 1,000 yards his junior year.
He's a fucking damn good player. His major knock is that he's a little weak. He could add strength, and so he might struggle with press man. I think he's actually perfect in that Z role where Debo plays, and you can play him off the line where he's not going to get pressed as much.
That's right.
You can move him around. I don't know if his first step is elite, but he has long striding speed and is a very smart route runner. He knows how to sit down in zone. He knows how to find space. He's long. And, you know, while, you know, you might not say he's the most athletic, he rips off yards after catch consistently.
Yes.
I just think he's a really smart player. If he was healthy, I think he'd be a pretty strong, like, consideration for a top 60 pick. Mm-hmm. You know, the lack of strength, whatever. I just think he's got a lot of craft to his route running and intelligence as a receiver and all of the measurables I personally need to say, hey, if it's at 94 or like 78, if you make a move with the Commanders, go get him.
Highly competent college receiver. I have some questions about Big 12 receivers in general, the way that Big 12 defense was, or Pac 12, I should say. I guess it's all Big 10 now.
Right.
Oh, remember college football? No. But let me throw a name at you here. Do you know anything about Jaquan Jackson out of Tulane?
I don't.
A little 5'9", 188 pound, scatty little fella. He is so much fun in the open field. Mm-hmm. He's so much fun. And you could say, oh, it was Tulane. Tulane was playing at as high a level as any college football team this past year. And so much of their offense was Michael Pratt, who I think is a very talented quarterback who will start in the NFL. Probably not full time, but will be, you know, he'll get those starts.
Probably more than Trey Lance.
Just get the ball to Jackson and let him do work. Great punt and kick returner. He's never going to be your X. He's never going to be your Y. But if you need to go to a third down and you need to, or just need to make something happen, I think that he could be a big time money player. I don't even know if he's a 151 option. He might even be a 151 plus, but I do think that there's enough on the tape that people are just going to fall in love with him. And someone's probably going to go up there and get him a little bit earlier. I don't think it should be the Niners, but I don't think that it shouldn't be them if he were to fall later, on the basis of they need a Ronnie Bell replacement. And I don't think that the X receiver backup role needs to be someone who is big, tall, and long. Because Andrew Hawkins, you might remember, with the Cleveland Browns, and his 1 year with Kyle Shanahan, caught over 100 balls. I think this guy has the mobility, the kind of the Zay Flowers-like open field ability to, if you scheme this guy open, you're just not catching him. You're not bringing him down. Yep. He's really, really fun. Who else you got?
I'm with you. My last two guys at the 151 plus range. Anaya Smith, we talked about.
Love Anaya Smith.
Crafty player.
Love Anaya Smith. I think
he might even go before 150.
That's what I'm talking about. This is one of those names that it's like, I bring him up to you and it's like, how's this guy a sixth, seventh round pick? And now he's like a third,
fourth. A little bit of buzz. He just moves so damn well. I love him. My other guy out of Louisville, Jamari Thrash.
Really? Okay. Talk to me about Thrash.
I'm not in love with him. But he's super quick and an excellent route runner.
Yeah.
Like he's engaged in the run game too. I think he might be a sneaky Ray replacement with a little bit of slot upside. That's why he's the 151 plus range. He's a little tiny, but he can move. And I don't know. I think that late in the draft, to get a guy who can maybe compete with Trent Taylor, who's your only kind of punt returner right now. Just be a little crafty, find space really well as a route runner. But
along the same sort of little bitty guy, 5'9", 180 pounds, Isaiah Williams out of Illinois, I think is a really polished receiver who has really good open field ability. And I think for a sixth, seventh round pick, maybe even up to the fifth, you could do a whole lot worse. And then I'm a big fan of, hold on, I got to find him here. The Michigan wide receiver. He's a big fella. Come on, Kurtenbach, get it together. Cornelius Johnson, 6 foot two, 212 pounds. He has all the measurables of an elite receiver, Never got the production at the college level, and I do think that is a scheme issue more than anything else at Michigan. It's one of the reasons I'm not high on J.J. McCarthy in general. This guy is out there. When he did get the ball, he did some stuff with it.
He's impressive.
They never let him shine. Cornelius Johnson out of Michigan is a guy I really like. So you want to move to tight ends?
Yeah, let's start ripping through these tight ends.
Let's do it. Who do you have as your top 50?
It's just Brock Bowers.
Yeah, I like Cade Stover. I think he should be a top 50 guy.
Cade Stover is my other guy with Ben Sinnott in the 51 to 150 range.
Agreed with you on that.
I think Cade Stover, it's funny. I really liked Cade Stover, and I remember last year, he didn't come out of the draft, and I was like, damn.
We were upset. We thought he was a third-round pick.
For sure. I thought he was really good. I was like, the Niners could use a tight end in the third round. They're like, we agree. Let's take the only guy you don't like.
That's right.
I'm still bitter.
You kept talking up Cade Stover, and I had to like tell you, like, he's not actually in this draft.
Right. No, but yeah, and he's good. He's just a really well-rounded tight end. He's got enough athleticism. He's got the wide frame to block really well, and he's just like the perfect possession receiver that I think would be an ideal complement to George Kittle.
I think Sinnott has the higher upside. I think Cade Stover's there as your number two. He can play that role of a number two just fine. He can be a full-time blocking guy. But if Kittle goes down, you can slide Cade Stover in, and he's just good enough to make everyone think about picking him up for a week in fantasy.
Agree.
Whereas everybody, if that were to have happened before, no one's picking up Ross Dwelly.
Totally. And I immediately like both of those guys 10 times more than whatever it is they have on the roster. And I might be higher on Braden Willis than Cam Latu, and I don't like either of those guys really that much.
Are we both on Tip Reman in the next region?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when 151, Tip Reman, basically at that spot, maybe slightly earlier, right on the border. After him, I got Eric All out of Iowa.
Yeah. Okay.
Who
I like him.
Is this
in the 151 range or plus
151? This is in the 151 plus range.
Yeah. Okay.
He moves super well.
Yeah.
When I see an Iowa tight end, I want them to be mauling a guy 10 yards down the field, and he's not really doing that.
No, he's a little more athletic.
He's 6 foot
four,
athletic.
250. But he's big built.
Yeah. You know, he could almost be like a big, H-back.
You watch him, and it's tough because it's not like Iowa does touchdowns. So it was kind of tough to see. But he was a viable red zone option. I thought he was a pretty clear route runner there. You know that if he's on the field, he's blocking. I think it's worth a shot. I do also think that he had an injury, so a lot of his measurables didn't come through. So you're just watching tape. And when you watch tape, he moves around really well.
Last guy real quick.
Yes.
I have to say his name again because it's incredible. Yeah. McCallum Castles.
This is just a pure athleticism play. This is an open field monster.
No, it's actually, I like how he blocked. He went to Davis and then transferred to Tennessee. I actually liked his tape.
I think he's a good player.
I'm like, he's basically, viewed as like an undrafted free agent. I actually would be fine taking him in like the late sixth round. Like, mm-hmm. I think he's a solid tight end. And again, the 49ers don't have much. And he's going to be committed to blocking with a little bit of athletic upside.
Yeah.
And no one really knows about him. So I like McCallum Castles, and his name is unreal.
The guy I really like in the maybe he's a free agent, maybe he's the last pick you make, Thomas Yasmin out of Utah. He's an Australian, played rugby. He got spotted at a rugby camp. It's so much fun to watch him play tight end because you just see it's like this is not going to be like any sort of a special player until they start to try to tackle him. And they bounce off of him like toddlers. It's really... I cannot recommend watching Thomas Yasmin's limited highlight tapes because I've watched the full games of Utah and it's like, he's fine. He's fine. And they scheme up some plays to get him the ball in the open field. He's fine. I think that the frame, 6'4", 250, You can teach him how to do everything. He's committed. He's tough, all that stuff. He just didn't get any run. He had injuries at bad times. Doesn't really know what the hell he's doing out there a lot of the time until his junior, senior year. I think this is a total.
That's like all of us in college.
Ain't that the truth, buddy? And so I think Thomas Yasmin, if for nothing else, because it might translate. And if it translates, I mean, you want to talk about a home run. He'll get the ball and then dudes just bounce off him. As much as I don't think of Pac-12 defenses, I really don't think highly of them at all. I'm not sure how I feel about NFL defenses. So Thomas Yasmin as a pick in the 200s, I think is a spectacular upside play. I think he has the talent. I think in a year we could be talking about Thomas Yasmin as one of the best tight ends in this class and one of the only guys to break through. That or we never hear from him again, in which case, what'd you lose?
Exactly.
But I don't feel the same way about like a Mason Plein or like a Devin Culp. Like, I just don't feel like, oh, they're going to break through. Like, I can see Thomas Yasmin being a dude. I can see it. And that's a very hard thing to find. I want to talk about quarterbacks.
Ooh, quarterbacks.
Are you even prepared for quarterbacks?
I did not.
Okay. Let me just, you want to talk running backs?
I was going to go to defensive tackle, but I guess we should stick with.
Let's just finish off the offense.
Yep.
Okay. I'll just give you my three quarterbacks right here. If we're talking top 50, which the 49ers will not be doing, I think Michael Penix is the guy. I don't see a downside to Michael Penix. I really don't. He was awesome at Indiana. He was awesome at Washington. He's a full-grown man. He's been making money for years. You bring him in, he's rock solid. It's not going to be spectacular, but if he'd be the best backup in the NFL, maybe he'd be the 20th best starter. I think you could do a whole lot worse. I just don't see the risk in Michael Penix, whereas everybody else is just red flags of risk.
Yeah.
151 to 150, which is somewhere where I can imagine the 49ers actually taking a quarterback. It's a long shot, but it is possible. I like Leary out of Kentucky.
Yep.
I think that he has all of the traits that Kyle Shanahan likes in his quarterbacks. He sees the field well, delivers it accurately and on time. He was coached by Rick Scangarello, so he does know the terminology. It's probably something that's held him back more than anything else. I think Leary's a really good option. 151, which is now we're getting into the reasonable spot. So we're talking not just 151, but also, you know, fourth arm coming in for camp. I don't know if this is right because, again, I really like Michael Pratt. I really like a Sam Hartman as viable options. I think Pratt's actually going to get taken pretty early. I think he'll be a top 100 pick. But Austin Reed out of Western Kentucky.
Also, Western Kentucky always has some very intriguing players. I don't know what it is about that program, but
as someone is, well, I can tell you very quickly, they used to recruit Florida and specifically the under recruited areas of Florida as well as anybody. And that started under Willie Taggart, who then got the South Florida job, did a very good job there, then got to Oregon and no longer could recruit Florida players. And it all went to hell in a handbasket for him. He is no longer even the coach of FAU because once you lose it for good. That said, Austin Reed is a guy, I believe it was Houston Baptist. They imported an entire football team with the new transfer rules. The Western Kentucky got an offensive coordinator from this school that was putting up major numbers. I think it was in Division II. Mm-hmm. And they just brought everybody. And this guy throws harder. This is a very weird thing, but I love watching it. He throws it harder than anybody else in any draft in recent memory. It is Colin Kaepernick-like laser beams anywhere. And I do think that if you have him in your system with that kind of arm talent, it's all of them, laser beams, 70 yards down the field, 5 yards down the field. It does not matter. It is coming in at 95 miles per hour. He can hit it in any window. No one has a better arm. I don't know if that makes him a good quarterback or not, but I would like to find out.
That's great.
He's so much fun to watch. He's going to break fingers in rookie minicamp. Break fingers. So much fun to watch.
Incredible.
Let me give you my running backs real fast because I did
prepare. Okay.
I love Troy Benson out of Florida State. We love pretty much everybody out of Florida State. I think he's spectacular. We've talked plenty about Tyrone Tracy Jr. He's my 51 to 150 guy.
Yep.
It's Tyrone Tracy Jr. That much is said. And we were talking about Vidal, Kamani Vidal out of Troy in the last pod. If you haven't listen to that. Save yourself the trouble. I'll tell you about him now. He ran it like 700 times in college and never fumbled once and just ran over everybody. He's a little bowling ball. He's the best.
And he's fast as hell. Yeah.
Alongside Ricky Pearsall, I'm convinced Kamani Vidal is going to be a player in the NFL of value. And that value might just be he is the third running back on the team, but he will be the third running back on a team forever. He will never cede that role. And there will be weeks where it's like, is Kamani Vidal someone I need to pick up in fantasy? And the answer is yes. If you need to replace Elijah Mitchell, you replace him with Kamani Vidal and you never think about it again.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
We want to go to DTs?
I'll do real quick on running backs, just briefly. I will mention two guys. I ignored basically the top 50. I didn't find anyone that was like,
not you don't really like Benson?
No, it's not that I don't like Benson. I just, they're not going to do it. What are we doing here?
Fair.
You know, George Helani, who I've mentioned from Boise State, does it all. Physical, like
can wonderful
pick
player.
Up, can pick up blitzes, and just runs really well. Isn't like he's fast. Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. He's not like burner speed.
4.5
He's shifty, can break away from stuff. Last guy I'll mention, Blake Watson out of Memphis, little like speedy scat back who's weirdly patient.
A lot of people like him.
Waits for his blockers in a way where I'm like, what am I watching?
5'9", 200 pounds.
He can play. He can play. He might really be a gunner. He might die because he's too small.
Yeah.
But I'm intrigued and I like it. I like it late in the draft.
All right. Do you want to go edge rushers or defensive tackles?
Let's start. Okay. We will, when we get in here to this, to the defensive side, I think we go defensive tackles because there's good stuff to talk about. That's the only other position I think that's really important. And then cornerback, defensive end is dog water. Absolute terrible scum.
There's some we need garbage. To discuss it though, but yes, we all agree that
do you want to get the scum? Do we want to scoop out the scum first?
Yeah, let's scoop out the scum first. Let's go defensive end. There are two players that I feel okay about in the top 50, knowing that the top three, Turner, Verse, and Latu are off the board. Yep. I feel good about Chop Robinson. I really do. And I feel good about Darius Robinson.
Yep.
So if you're not getting a Robinson, fuck off.
Exactly. I'm with you. Same as me.
Marshawn Kneeland out of Western Michigan. I keep watching. I'm waiting for when he looks interesting or explosive.
I don't understand it. People were rumbling. The 49ers like him. I didn't get it. What do they like? It's also like, it's how I feel when I watch Austin Booker out of Kansas. Listen, the guy might be very good. He wins. He actually has some good tape. Yep. But the way he runs, I can't convince myself because he's got little like T-Rex arms.
Yep.
I don't understand it, and it actually makes me mad watching his tape. And I know that's unreasonable, but I can't turn those blinders off, and it makes me sick to my stomach. Got that off my chest.
You brought up someone to me now. I don't think that there's a 50 to 151 guy that I'm willing to take the chance on.
I would do Muhammad Kamara.
You like Kamara later, that much?
Much later. Like in the
149,
I'd be okay with him at like 124.
Okay.
I would be okay with that.
Okay. I don't like any of the 50 to 151 guys. I actually kind of like a lot of the 151 plus guys.
There's cause it's like this whole defensive end class is this guy doesn't know how to play football, but he's kind of a freak athlete.
I mean, if we're talking 50 to 151, like I can talk myself into Jonah Ellis. Like you can teach him how to play.
I thought he's like a third rounder, but that's
what we're talking about.
But yeah, no, I'm with you. I like Jonah Ellis.
I like Cedric Johnson. I don't like his motor, but I like Cedric Johnson.
Yep, that's fair. But let's
we both like Brennan Jackson.
Yes. Super, super fast off the ball, high motor, converts speed to power in a really impressive way.
Good hands.
Where you're just like, you just watch these tackles go, oh God, oh no, oh no. He's skinny. I'm not totally convinced he can hold an edge, at least yet.
Because his hands are so good and because he's got a little weight to him, I think that he could be a really good five technique.
Yeah.
You see more explosion in him than I do. I see somebody who is a pretty damn good tactician. I think that says everything you need to know about
him. No, he's crafty. He had like 9.5 sacks or something last year. Like he produces 19
sacks
too.
In his career at Washington
State. It's weird that he's like a sixth round guy. I don't get this draft in some ways.
I don't get it. At this position, I don't get it. Let me throw two more names at you here. Pardon me. Miles Cole out of Texas Tech, 6'6", 278. I think he could just play. I think he would fit what the Niners like to do, where you can slide a guy from holding the edge, setting a goddamn edge, sometimes getting into the back, but just setting the goddamn edge. Right. And then also you can slide him inside on pass rush downs if you're feeling saucy. And then Trajan Jeffcoat, who I think has the measurables and I think the pedigree as well. He is not going to be an every down player. He is going to be a sixth or a seventh round pick. When he was on the field at Missouri and Arkansas, there were moments of spectacular play. He's an all SEC player.
Him some problems.
Yes. He was an all SEC player. And the only knock that I've gotten on him is, well, he wasn't very consistent and they would, you know, he kind of disappear in games. Well, I got an idea. Why don't we look at the very high end of what he can do and then say, he's a sixth or seventh round pick. Right. We're not playing him every flipping down.
Exactly.
But if you throw him in there as somebody who, hey, we need a little juice. And, you know, we've been setting the edge all day up the five technique, but we need a little bit of juice. Can you go kill somebody, but also be able to hold your own if they run? But can you go kill the goddamn quarterback for us? And you're not putting somebody small out there. You're putting somebody out there who knows what the hell they're doing and might not be the most polished, might not have this great arsenal of moves. But you know what? He just seems to find a way to kill the quarterback when you ask him to do it. If you ask him to do it every down, he's going to get tired. And he doesn't have the moves, so the offensive linemen are going to do it. But if you just throw him out there, he's going to get the job done. He's someone who just got the job done, not necessarily again and again and again, but at a very high level in very short spurts at 6'3" and 266 pounds. I think he'd be a brilliant pick for the Niners late.
Agreed. All right, let's get to the juiciest, and I mean the meatiest part of this draft.
I love him.
Defensive tackle.
It's a great defensive tackle draft.
It's dope. Like, this is my favorite position group. And not just because we love watching defensive tackles in general, but it's a good, like, it's a crop.
What a crop.
Who?
Look at that horse chest.
Who's your top 50?
It's Johnny Newton.
Yep.
I'm not entirely thrilled with the burst off the line for Johnny Newton.
It's weirdly slow, but his hands are crazy.
But I would not take him in the first round. Let me be clear about that. Not at 31. If he's still hanging around in the 40s, that's a little aggressive. He's a perfect fit, like right before 50. Right there. If you're there, that's just perfection.
Some people have him as like 15th overall.
I get it. Not in this scheme, not in this defensive line. Unless the 49ers want to fundamentally change what it is they want to do at one technique, but he can play one technique. And I think he has great wiggle. Like he's finds the ability to be slithery, but also stout. And I love that athleticism, even if it's not just bam and go, he can cover a couple gaps for you. I think his hands are exceptional. I think he is. I think he's going to be a very high floor NFL player. Yep. Who has the ability to be a real impact guy. I think that in a couple of years, we'll be talking about Johnny Newton as somebody that real guys who actually watch football and care about it and grind tape and are on Game Pass and getting all 22 and stuff. They'll talk about Johnny Newton in exalted tones and no one else will know who the hell he is.
Yep, that's fair. My only other guy, and this is basically like right on the fringe, is Braden Fisk. Like I love Braden Fisk
and I see why you like him.
And I've cooled on him a little bit because he gets so high sometimes physically, but I think that can be coached. I just think his athleticism can't be taught. His motor can't be taught. He can get skinny and move past guys in a way that I think is pretty unique to him. And his pass rushing upside is really high. I think he can get better in the run game too. But that said, I've cooled on him a little bit. And I think there's guys who might be slightly more well-rounded, like 51 to 150 early in that, like Michael Hall out of Ohio State. Awesome.
He's a great player. I don't see it in this scheme. I don't see it in this scheme. Yep. If they get him, it's not as if he's a bad player and he's not going to fit. It's that he's sort of a jack of all trades and a master of none. He's weirdly sized for the position. He's somewhat of a tweener. And sometimes tweeners just turn out to be so goddamn good, it doesn't matter. You find a spot for him. He doesn't strike me as the kind of talent that you scrap plans to build around. Right. He's not that good.
Agreed.
And agreed. That's where
I think Ruka Roro is.
That's my guy.
I think he's going to be, I think Michael Hall's actually going to go earlier than Roro.
Yeah, there's a lot of buzz on Roro right now.
Little bit of a better fit. He's great. We talked about him a ton. Outside of that,
perfect scheme fit, by the way, should be noted.
One guy I've fallen in love with, not fallen in love with, but like liked a little bit more is Leonard Taylor III out of Miami.
Oh, really?
He is not elite in anything, but above average in everything.
Yeah, that's fair.
He has strong
hands. I'd say the
same
about Dwayne Carter at Duke.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, he's more like around, you know, four guy. And so that's the range for me. At the end of the draft, there's two guys I like. One is just a nose tackle who's just going to eat up ground, and that's Fabian Lovett out of Florida State. Mm-hmm. Just a meatball, but like a good meatball.
That's right.
You know,
not so big that it's jarring.
Right. And then Tyler Davis out of Clemson, I think, is undervalued. I think he's large, can eat up space, can work for you in the run game, and has a tiny bit of pass rushing quality that surprised me a little bit more.
That's right.
He's not the athlete, you know, like a Roro, but he is decent leverage, bigger frame. He intrigues me.
I really like Jaden Crumedy out of Mississippi State.
Oh, yeah. He's actually the other guy I had on the board.
No. I had him too. I think he's a top 100 player over. I really do. And, you know, some of the measurables don't line up with his tape.
Right.
You look at the broad jump, you look at some of these other things, and you go, this guy is way more athletic than that. Yeah. I think he has a real knack for finding the ball. I think he has underrated pass rush moves. I think that you can line him up at the one or the three. I think that he's really, really, really competent. And
yeah,
I would legitimately take him in the top 100, and I'm seeing him as a fifth round pick. There's some teams that love him. There's some teams that don't know about him.
I don't rate him that highly, but my notes are similar. Like, he's got force, the point of attack, like not sure about the wiggle, but he's got power.
He's got some wiggle though. Like,
he can play. I said not a ton, but he's got enough.
He looks like someone who is correctly placed on the football field, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Like, his body, he knows he is in control of his body. He's not a skinny guy that had to get fat. He's not a super fat guy who doesn't have the athletic, but like, he's right on line. So
right.
There's something there. All right. Saw corners.
Last two positions. These are the absolute crapshoot ones out of anything. Corner, safety, tough, you know, trying to get, it's like most players you can evaluate with all 22 tape. Dude, college, bro. I mean, cornerbacks and safeties, one, they get terrible assignments and what they're asked to do in these dog shit defenses that make a mockery of the sport of football, that say, oh, we're going to play with 17 defensive backs because we have forsaken all that has been created, all the history of football, all these great football minds. We don't care because we're evil, and we like it in the Big 12 in the middle of the country. We're just going to throw the ball 75 times and run 150 plays a game. Anyway, we're good. We're fine.
Who cool. do you like as your top 50? Who's a realistic first round pick for you?
TJ Tampa out of Iowa State. I want to watch more of him. I don't know if I'm sold, but the frame is good. I have four guys, but I'm not sold on any of them. I've got Kool-Aid McKinstry, TJ Tampa, Kamari Lassiter. Lassiter tested terribly, but I think he's a great corner.
I love Lassiter.
I love Lassiter. He's my favorite corner, but he ran like, I think, a 4.69 or something. And people are,
he doesn't
look that slow to me. He's my top corner.
He's instinctual.
He's so smart too. Like, no one in this draft prepares in the same way. I just think he's going to be excellent. He's my really top corner. Max Melton out of Rutgers is intriguing, but he's a little small for me. Mm-hmm. I think he's like a guy that's viewed as like a top 50 pick, and I'd really want him in like the early third round.
Okay. Yeah.
Because he's quick, but he can like get reverse jammed off the line of scrimmage and just get kind of tossed.
Yes. I think Cooper DeJean is about as perfect a nickel as you're going to find in any draft. You can put him outside for sure. Like you can play man with him if he's right in the slot. Not only is he going to give you great punt and kick return ability, I think he has a nose for the football in ways that it can't really be explained by mere science. I think if he's sitting there at 31, they just can't say yep no to that kind of talent, that kind of player.
He's going to be a gold helmet.
Maybe. I don't know what the hell that means anymore. Lynch went on for, 10 minutes about the gold
helmet. He rambled today.
And the eye rolls were impossible to hold back. It's just, I appreciate that they
gold fucking helmet guys.
Yeah. Are they good at football?
What does that mean? You just like that they want, they have a good family that they're raised right? I don't understand it.
They're white. So he will be a gold helmet guy because he's white. Kool-Aid McKinstry.
51 through 150.
Oh, wait, I have Lassiter there. I think Lassiter is going to, it's Lassiter hands down for me. We both like Renardo Green. Renardo Green's falling. People look at me cross-eyed when I bring up Green. I don't get what they're seeing. I think Renardo Green
He's an excellent corner tactician. The knock is he's a little undersized and maybe doesn't play through the ball ideally, but he can play.
Yeah. I like Chris Abrams-Drain as my 151 plus out of Missouri. I think that there were times when he was the best corner on the field. Ennis Rakestraw is a borderline first round player. I think Chris Abrams-Drain was just as good and just as impactful for Mizzou. Yeah. That's a team that I watched every snap, every game multiple times of this year. I think if you get either of the Mizzou corners, you're in really good stead when it comes to it. Again, not somebody who has these crazy measurables or anything like that. Can be said for Rakestraw, but they just know what the hell they're doing and they make plays. And sometimes the play is just making sure that the guy only gets 6 yards instead of 14. And like, that's fine. That's football in this modern age. Where do you think DJ James, a guy we both like as a nickel out of Auburn, is going to go?
Like third, late second through like at latest early fourth. Like he feels third round strongly to me. I think him and Andrew Phillips are in the same mold of like they're going to be really good nickels and are better value, at least I think, than Sanra Still, who can be really good, but I think might go a little too early for my taste. I like both those guys. My 151 plus guys, I have three.
Okay.
I have Elijah Jones out of Boston College, super long, can press, like has surprising athleticism, needs to put on some weight, but is better against the run than I'd expect. Just give him 10 pounds and he might be like a good press man corner.
Yeah.
DeCamrion Richardson, a little bit of a project, but he can fly. Like he's lanky, not quite as hip flippy as you want, a tiny bit stiff, but with outstanding upside. His hands on press worry me a little bit, but his ball tracking and instincts, they're a little iffy, like especially on like a curl and go, like a stutter go. But he weirdly has like the best tackling form I've seen out of any player, like tackles perfectly low, wraps up. And I just think he's like a developmental corner.
6'2" as well. I mean, you can't teach height.
Really good size. And my last guy.
Yeah.
Quantes Stiggers.
Yep.
Out of Toronto Argonauts, a guy who was supposed to go to college, under-recruited, then played in like the fan-controlled football
league. That's right. Which I had the, I watched one of those games.
That the shame is palpable.
It was brutal. It was absolutely
and
brutal.
But then he went to the CFL and he was like the rookie of the year there. The quality is iffy, but he has a place as a late round draft pick, just as a guy with great frame, great athleticism. Doesn't totally know what he's doing, nor should he, because he didn't really play college, super raw, but I'm intrigued.
He went to the BEST Academy in suburban Atlanta, which sounds like a con. And guess what? It was.
That sounds about right.
I kind of like Johnny Dixon, maybe as a slot guy. Kamal Hayden. How you feeling about Kamal Hayden?
Yeah, Kamal Hayden. I've cooled on him a little bit, but like he was like a viewed before he had a bad injury. He's like a top corner that might go in the top 100.
That's right.
I think he's just smart, knows how to play the position long. Late round pick. I'm with it.
I will not tell anybody who drafts any cornerback that they were right or wrong because goddamn safety.
I don't know.
We both agree on one guy on safety without a question. Javon Bullard is incredible.
I think honestly, what's funny is this is a pretty weak safety class. Let me say one thing. Let me just take the podium. Cam Kitchens, no one should draft him. I have not seen worse effort from a player. He just like there will be a throw.
This is like, the Miami safety.
Yes. He doesn't try. Like, and I don't see any like he's oh my God. It's maddening to watch him play football. And he's gonna drive some fan base absolutely insane. And
he'll never see the field if they have a competent GM.
He's going to get drafted in like the third round for no reason. I don't understand what the upside is to him at all. And I'm not just trying to rip on this player, but terrible, terrible tape. Anyway, back to the guys I do like, which there are exactly three in a very weak safety class. They don't include Sione Vaki, who I don't like him either. I'm sorry I'm ripping on guys. It's a bad safety class.
Yeah.
My guys who I do Utah like, safety. Von Bullard.
Yes, everyone likes Bullard. Bullard's incredible.
Great player. Just,
he's the best safety in this class. I don't understand how Jaden Hicks. Far. It's not
Jaden Hicks. I'm trying not to rip on guys. I don't want to.
I don't get it with Jaden Hicks.
I don't see it at all. Like I don't.
I think he can cover a lot of ground. I don't really know what he does.
So can Malik Mustafa, who I actually like.
You love Malik Mustafa. Yep.
There's three players, one in each category. Top 50, Javon Bullard, only one, hands down.
No
51
question.
To 150, Cole Bishop out of Utah.
Agreed.
I think he's got some range, can be a very solid player, has enough athleticism. Fine. Malik Mustafa.
Mustafa is like your cannon. 151 up. I think Mustafa might. Yeah, okay. 151 up. Yeah, that's fine.
Yes. That's great. And that's it. And I don't think any other, I don't have a draftable grade on any of these safeties that I've watched.
I like Jalen Carlisle out of Mizzou. Stunner, but I think Mizzou. That he was. I think that
sorry to take the end of this time and just absolutely yell about these young men who are living their dreams.
Oh, they're trying to live their dreams.
Well, you better try.
Sorry. Carlisle, much like everybody else on that Mizzou defense, just like terribly instinctual.
Right.
That was one of the best defenses in the SEC in college football this past year. I think that there's a bunch of really good players on it. I mean, and there's a homer bias, no question.
And now they're all gone. And are you going to be okay?
I've suffered through worse before. I want to touch on linebackers just real fast.
Yep.
I don't like anyone who is a consensus top 50. Maybe Edger and Cooper, but no. legitimately, the top linebacker... When I watched all these guys, the top linebacker on my board was Cedric Gray out of North Carolina. I think he's a legitimate top 50 player.
Yeah,
I think he's awesome. I think he's awesome. He's rangy. He's mean. Yeah. He has a nose for the ball. I think he covers well. What did I miss? What did I miss with Cedric Gray?
No, nothing. I like him a lot. There's three linebackers I like. It's him. It's Jordan McGee out of Temple, who's just like a project player who is... has the best movement skills out of any defensive player in this draft, in my opinion. Just flies across the field.
Could be a great special teamer. Corner.
Yeah, might be a safety. Probably just a special teams guy. And then Marist Liufau out of Notre Dame intrigues me.
Marist Liufau.
Yes. Marist Liufau out of Notre Dame.
Yep.
I think he's got some range. He's a little mean around the ball. I'm intrigued by him, especially since he's graded at, it was like a fifth, sixth round pick.
Yeah, he's late.
He's intriguing. He's got good size, got good range, and I think he's got decent instincts.
Tyrone Hopper, Missouri, controlled the entire field when he was on the field. Total game changer. You look at Sorry, it's late. I got a toddler. Who the hell is the linebacker for the Chiefs?
They had like seven of them. I know
who they had a guy out of Mizzou. It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. You can say, oh, he doesn't have the measurables. Isn't that
name,
like linebacker?
Name a single football player challenge.
We're experts, you guys. Okay. I'm going to throw a couple names at you that I actually like. I think that this is kind of an underrated linebacker class. Edifon Olufoshu out of Washington.
I kept trying to like him. I couldn't do it.
There's nothing to dislike, though. That's where I'm at. I think he's just solid and competent, and you just put him in a rotation, and he'll be fine. He will be fine. Tyron Hopper, I already named. Nathaniel Watson out of Mississippi State is just a tackling machine. And I don't see any measurables. I mean, there's some character issues, I think. He's been arrested a couple times, I believe. I really hope I'm not disparaging him. Let me double check my notes here. But like, oh, actually, he's no, yeah, he five star. Yeah, that's James. Well, Nathaniel Watson. Here we go. Driving under the influence and first degree assault. Okay. Just wanted to make sure I had that right. He's just Dre Greenlaw. Sorry to put that on Dre Greenlaw. That has nothing to do with Dre Greenlaw. By accounts, an upstanding citizen.
Thank you
citizen.
For clarifying. He just won the Dwight Clark Award.
No. By all accounts, an upstanding citizen. The only reason that Nathaniel Watson, as far as I can tell, is going to be available to anybody at 151 plus because of his ability to, I see here, get 137 tackles this past season and 113 the year before that in the SEC. By the way, with 6 and 10 sacks, respectively. I don't give a damn that he ran a 4.63 40-yard dash in the SEC. All he did was kill. This is a player who strictly is out to kill. There is no football being played. This is murder. And it is so much fun to watch. And we all love watching Dre Greenlaw, who's like, right. I don't care what the play is. My play is murder.
And if it's the 6th, 7th round and you're saying, hey, if you fuck up once, you're gone, go for it.
That's fine. I mean, he was drag racing, driving under the influence. Just make him take the bus.
Take the light rail.
Take the VTA, baby. You'll be fine. This guy's a killer. Hopefully not literally. By the way, James Williams was a former safety, moved into linebacker, crazy mobility. I think that there's some really good athletic upside at linebacker in this class. And those are my guys. Those are our guys.
Those are our guys, folks. And for those of you sickos who have stayed with us and have not watched the last episode of Shogun, which I am about to.
Dude, so excited. You want to live text throughout it? You want to live stream it?
We should. We'll have a. You can buy it online. We'll have a play by play.
We get a NFL
GSIS Shogun breakdown. A play by play.
Beheadings per minute.
We'll have next gen stats for Shogun's final episode.
And by the way, very excited to put 2024 draft binder away.
I can't wait. I'm stoked for this draft. I think we're gonna ideally live stream this thing on Thursday.
We're gonna talk first round on Thursday. We're gonna talk second and third round on Friday. I don't know if we'll be able to do it on Saturday. I got 4 hours of radio during the middle of it, so that'd be interesting.
And Dieter also has a child, so that's a factor.
Do I? She's still alive. We're gonna find out. What a champion! I'm so tired. All right, bye.
Way everybody. To power through, buddy. Thank you. All of you, all of you sickos.
You're all depraved.